55d84. Thus, what I have been trying to do in the exegesis, and which exhausts me, is deliberately, on my own part again, do what I did in 2374. But that was sparked by the messenger, and now I have him not. Hence I simply become more and more weary as world becomes more and more powerful over me. I seek to regain, to recapture, the liberator of 274 to 275, whereupon world regained its power over me. The vision was lost and I fell back. I do not seek to gain gnosis and liberation, but to regain it. I had it and lost it. This is why trying to write Owl broke me. It is this that is the topic of Owl. Although my effort seems cerebral, having to do with thinking, it is really existential, but failing. Cerebral equals knowledge equals gnosis, typically Faustian, as in Goethe's Faust, Part 1. Valis built the maze and fell into it. The maze changes because it is alive. It is alive because it draws on and from the very thoughts of the creation trapped in it. His efforts to solve it are thoughts, and it is these thoughts that fuel it, i.e., it is one vast Chinese finger trap. The harder I try to get out, the more powerful world becomes. Hence, my increasing exhaustion. What then should I do? 55d85. I was treated to a demonstration of Yahweh. Thought, word, and reality were one, with no ideation separate from the word and no difference between the word, what I said, and the deed. It was the deed. Moreover, there was absolute a priori knowing about Denise, about Tess, and this unitary thing, thought, word, act, is his power, omnipotence. He willed it so, by the use of holy wisdom, a separate hypostasis, who is never apart from him. The really extraordinary thing is that although I was terror-stricken, I experienced absolute lucidity. I saw and understood my total situation perfectly, without degree and without reasoning it out. It was utter knowledge. I was, had been, destroying that which was of most value to me in the world. Tessa and Christopher, they are all I have. However good or bad Denise is intrinsically, that was secondary and tangential. God summoned me back to what was morally right and what existed. It was right and it was real. I had been occluded and severely jeopardized this most precious element in my life. This was no vague intimation. Yahweh summoned me back from the lip of the abyss. What I stood to lose by my wrong actions was that which my very physical life depended on. I was on the brink of literal doom, yet indirectly so. Denise would destroy me, not by what she did, but by what I did. There was in this a vast moral summons. For in Judaism, God and morality are one and the same. This was the Lord God of Israel, not just a vague God, but Yahweh. And I knew it. This was the God of the Torah summoning me back to moral reality with no choice. He willed it. He commanded me to return to life and what was right. In him and by him, the two are one and the same. Thus morality, and that which gives and sustains life, stood bipolarized to immorality, sin, and that which takes life. Sin and death then were one. I sinned and I died. Abandoning Tessa and Christopher meant my death. Moreover, he gave me words to express all this to them, rather than just an understanding of it. So deed was conjoined to knowledge. What I knew I did, act and cognition being one, as morality, the law of God, and life were one. It was 374 all over again, but with moral overtones, carried beyond the irresistible to the terrifyingly irresistible. In this case, I had fallen into mortal sin. This was not the case in 374. There I was in peril, but not in peril of mortal sin. I could then lose my freedom or life, but here I lost my soul. I not only doomed myself, I damned myself. Here power and wisdom prevailed. In 374, knowledge and love prevailed. This yesterday was Yahweh, not Abba. The situation was intricate, unstable, ambiguous. There was a single right choice, and it had to be made then and no later. God made it for me based on His wisdom, power, and because it involved morality, goodness, as exemplified by the law. Thus, having justified me in 2374, He forbade me from sinning any further. He intervened absolutely. Note: in early November 1981, Dick made a difficult personal decision, choosing to stay in Fullerton to be near Tessa and Christopher, rather than moving to the Bay Area to continue a relationship with a married woman. This decision is framed here in terms of biblical morality. 2374, he says, transformed him into someone who could not continue down the path the relationship was leading him. Though elsewhere, Dick is deeply concerned with free will's absolute victory over determinism. He presents this as a decision made by God on his behalf, asserting that he really had no choice. Compare this with his statements on the assistance he gave to Covenant House, which he described as a new act not governed by normal rules of incentive or even causation. In any case, it's clear that Dick believed that a pre-1974 PKD would have made a very different decision in this situation. GM. End note. This was an invasion of my psyche by absolute knowledge. It bore no relation to what I had up to that moment believed, wrongly believed. There was not even a sense of insight, of satori. It was pure knowledge, like a sort of seeing, a vision of the situation as it actually was. And it was primarily a moral seeing. Absolute moral rectitude occurred in me. It simply took place. All at once it was. I guess I saw it as God saw it, and how different that was, and absolute. It was not a viewpoint, it was knowing. What I have been calling the meta-abstraction is in fact knowledge, the act of knowing, as God knows, i.e., knows what is, i.e., world. In 274, and more fully later in 374, I saw as God sees and understood as God understands, that is, absolutely and a priori, in which what is known is exactly the same as what is. They are assimilated to each other. That the mind of God was at that time in my mind, I experienced that as Valis in my mind. All that I saw, Christian, apocalyptic world, the plasmate set to ground, the prison, the secret Christians, the abolition of time, i.e., coaxial reality and the conception perception of eternal constants, this is how God sees. I did not see this or understand this. God saw and understood this. And, as I say, I saw and understood because He bloomed in my mind like cold white light. Hence, I experienced an infinitude of space. Augustine teaches this. The divine illumination, later picked up by Malebranche. I realize this due to Sunday night, when the same absolute knowing by God in me induced a realization of my practical and moral jeopardy. Again, there was certitude, total, unconditioned knowing. But what I knew this time was dreadful and lethal to me practically and spiritually. Once again, the unitary fusion of knowing and doing occurred because for God, there is no distinction between what He knows and what He does. Ratiocination, logic itself, thinking itself, does not occur because it is not required. God does not figure out. He does not reason because He does not need to reason. It was both times as if my mind expanded into infinity, conceived as spatial infinity. The sense one gets is that one's mind contains all reality, and this is because all reality is known a priori and absolutely, not sensibly and contingently. I guess for a moment I was plunged into hell and discovered what it consists of. One is given absolute moral insight into one's own sinful nature, and there is no way it can be rectified. It is now too late. Hence, hell is eternal. This is clearly and obviously the just punishment and the logical punishment, absolutely, by the knowledge of God's own mind, to see what one has done, illuminated by the divine light that reveals all. This is total knowledge of the situation and of oneself. It can be awful. By this divine illumination, one's cognition perception condemns one. This is absolute self-condemnation, not based on arbitrary rules, but on total comprehension of what really is structural and how one has fitted into this structure and changed it by one's deeds. The harmony and order of the cosmos are disrupted by what one has done. It was not guilt that I experienced. It was understanding. This is more terrible than any guilt. Guilt admits of degree. This was boundless. These revelations that took place Sunday night tell me a great deal about God, wisdom, morality, and the Torah, and the order and sustaining of the cosmos, understandings I never had even an inkling of before. I see how correct moral laws function in the divine government and are inseparable from the physical laws that regulate reality itself. Moreover, this being the case, the homologizing, logically, of physical law and moral law in sustaining the cosmos, i.e. order, shows why God as cosmocrator is ontologically the source of morality as his primary attribute or manifestation, as Judaism teaches. And as I say, the Gnostics are correct. Hymarmony combines causation and the Mosaic dispensation because both are essential in the divine government. God's will, then, which, as Spinoza rightly says, is physical law, is based on holy wisdom, who informs the Creator of what is, and in a certain real sense, the absolute comprehension of what is, omniscience, determines what should be. Thus, as I say, wisdom and morality and the preservation of the cosmos, universal rules, become one. My radical new comprehension stems from sharing God's view of reality and morality as a unitary thing. They only become unitary, one and the same, when holy wisdom is involved, so that absolute a priori knowing exists. The key term is being. Sein, esse, eine. This is what is preserved, because this is what holy wisdom knows. Hence the role of God as creator is stressed. I did manage to deal with some of this in DI. I can now see clearly why and in what way Hagia Sophia is the primary agent in creation. All this, based on Sunday night, is probably one of the greatest leaps in my theology, epistemology, worldview, ideology. There is nothing radical in it. It is fundamental, the Old Testament itself. And yet, significantly, I was already moving in this direction, in my thinking, as expressed in DI, and in my life, conservatism, preservation, accrual, and building, creating, and, very important, stability. What epitomizes all this is not idealism, but the rational, as Rabbi Hertz and others point out regarding Judaism. One could say that Sunday night, absolute rationality invaded my mind and totally possessed it. Apollo, then, in contrast to Dionysus or Faust. Yes, ever since 274, I have venerated and sought out Santa Sophia, for it was she of whom the AI voice spoke. I see myself as intoxicated up to Sunday night, whereupon I became sober. I came to my senses very suddenly, at the last moment. 55, D-110. I have plumbed the true secret core of authentic Christianity, i.e., in 2374. Hidden within the passion, the crucifixion, is its mere opposite, ecstasis, joy, i.e. Dionysus. And this is what broke over me in 2374. Not just theoretical knowledge, gnosis, but the Christian ecstatic experience. Hence, when I read Luke, I recognize Jesus as a miracle worker, a guru, a magician. He is the God of change. 5D115. This means that my lifetime search in plumbing the depths of suffering in order to unravel its mysteries has proven successful. This relates to the rat, the beetle, the burning Japanese soldier, the Galapagos turtle. This has to do with empathy, my empathy, which is another word for agape. And agape is the greatest of the Christian virtues, as Paul tells us. It is the true way of the Christian. But why? Because it is good, i.e., a virtue? Note: the moral vision that ties all of Dick's work together is rooted in the redemptive power of empathy. This emotional connection, the ability to experience the feelings, particularly the suffering of others, counteracts the temptation to withdraw from the risk of loving others and into the safety of ourselves. When Dick's characters struggle to determine what's real, they ultimately have to rely on the people who care about them. Stable reality in Dick's work is always predicated on the sincerity of the emotions that pass between people. In his fiction, Dick famously asks two questions: what is real and what is human? It could be said that his work provides a single connected answer to both. What is real is what we perceive when we are emotionally engaged in the world, and what is human is what allows us to make an empathic connection to the world. DeGore's connection to the biosphere, in which the young boy takes on the suffering of the planet in the form of wounds that riddle his body, is a profoundly empathetic relationship. Similarly, when Dick learned that Anwar Sadat had been assassinated, he crushed a soda can and dragged the edge against his inner arm until he drew blood. For Dick, the reality of that moment involved pain, and truly connecting with that moment involved sharing the suffering. DG. End note. Not exactly. Agape is a road along which one travels in imitation of Christ to penetrate to the core, deepest ontological layer of suffering, his passion and crucifixion. And there, if you follow that road, and that road only, you arrive at the secret, the resurrection, which is the miraculous conversion of suffering into ecstasy, which is uniquely the Christian miracle. This is how Christianity and Christianity alone solves the problem of suffering. This solution is not a philosophical intellectual understanding, e.g., why there is suffering, but an event. The dramatic conversion of suffering, not into mere stoic apathy, the mere lack of suffering, but into its effective and ontological bipolar opposite, ecstasy. And here, precisely, Dionysus Zagreus enters. Jesus is Dionysus Zagreus as a solution to suffering. This is not just ecstasy, but more, ecstasy as the conversion of suffering. This conversion is not found in the Dionysian Orphic system. Ecstasy is sought for its own sake. There is, then, no exaltation in suffering per se here. Suffering, as in Buddhism, is to be solved. Thus, Jesus addresses the same problem that Buddhism and Stoicism address, but solves it quite differently. If Buddhas can be called victors, certainly then the Christian, who goes all the way to the end of the road of agape, is even more a victor, for he is not merely liberated from suffering, he experiences ecstasy. Why? My perception is, he remembers Christ the bridegroom, having just been here, and anticipates his imminent return, and is now, as bride preparing for that return. The Christian is right now making the wedding preparations in this tiny interval between Christ leaving and his anticipated imminent return. This is the Dasein of the true Christian, and this is joyful, in fact, ecstatic. I know because I experienced it. There is memory of Christ, anamnesis, and anticipation, eschatology, and most of all, the sense of oneself as the bride of Christ, which is as soul, which is female. This hierogamy is consummated by the birth in the Spirit, the purpose of the messianic mission. And I do speak of this in Vallas. All time and all space collapse into this, the memory, the anticipation, and the understanding of oneself as the intended bride, which is literally, not just symbolically, fulfilled by the birth in the Spirit which occurs now. It is not anticipated, but occurs. Yet the road to this is through suffering. And it is not just actual, involuntary suffering, such as is imposed on all creatures, but rather the vicarious and voluntary ontological suffering of agape. In imitation of Christ, one voluntarily takes on all suffering, but as means, not end.